Sri Chaitanya Manovistam Stapitam Dena Bhutale Sayam Rupakadamayam Dadati Savanantikam. Vansha Kalpaturu Vyascha Kripa Sindhu Vaivacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namah. Sasa, have you vowed not to shave until the Pakistanis get driven from Kashmir? No, okay. Okay. Maybe you could open the window a little, but don't jump out. It is lonely without Monkey Bihari. I was just thinking about him before. I can only tease you a little bit, massage you a little bit. Without Monkey here, life is half its pleasure. Sahasra is always, of course, it's good to play with. But life just isn't the same. So we've heard something wonderful yesterday about the perfection of the yoga process, where one is meditating upon the Lord who is in the heart. Without Krishna being in the heart, we could not do anything. Even though we have our own consciousness, without Krishna invoking our consciousness, we are fully dependent upon Him. We have our desires, and yet without Krishna sanctioning our desires, even sanctioning our consciousness, we cannot be conscious. What to speak of, fulfill our desires. So meditating upon that Lord, we've read about that and the beauty of the Lord, and how to meditate upon the Lord of the Heart through yoga. The Lord of the Heart is called Paramatma. Through yoga, we have heard that. So, from text 34, it progresses the stages of yoga. The description of the stages of yoga progress still further beyond even just meditating upon the Lord. Even if one can constantly meditate on the Lord, that is not ultimately the goal. So in text 34, Evam harau bhagavati patilabdhya bhavo bhaktya javad nridhaya utpalakat pramodat utkantya vaspa kalaya muhuradhyamanas Tascha pichita badesham shanakar vayunte. So evam harau bhagavati pratilabdha bhavo. Evam means thus. So after meditating upon the Lord and having no desire practically to see anything else, thus, the next, then what happens? Harau bhagavati. Harau means towards Lord Hari, Bhagavati, the personality of Godhead. Pati labdha bhava. So bhav, or love, is developed towards that supreme personality of Godhead, Hari. Bhaktya jarva dridhaya. Bhaktya, by that bhakti, by that love, by that devotional service. Jarva dridhaya. Dravad means melting, riddaya. The heart melts. Because meditating on the Lord, shravanam, kirtanam, vishnu, smaranam. Smaranam means thinking about the Lord or meditating upon Him. So when one performs devotional service, one becomes so pure by meditating upon the Lord, then the heart melts upalabdha, and he experiences utpulaka. Pulak means the hairs, and ut means standing up. So the standing of the hairs on the body when the heart melts in great love for Krishna. Utkantya, occasioned by intense love. Utpulaka pramoda, from excessive joy, the hairs stand out. So this, we can just imagine, even just, and the same thing actually can be obtained by meditating, focusing, consciously concentrating regularly on the holy names of Krishna. The whole, one can become ecstatic. This is the process basically that we follow. We don't follow the yogic process or the Astanga yoga process. We follow the process of chanting and hearing. By listening attentively to Krishna's names, gradually love is experienced by the devotees. In Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, this pula kasariya, when will the hair, Anuruddha Das says, when will the hair on my body stand on end by recitation of your holy names? So, basya kalaya, and then a stream of tears, muhu, constantly, arjamana, being afflicted. So this is a very, very high stage that's being described by through the process of yoga. Here's Prabhupada's translation. By following this course, thus by following this course means of yoga and full meditation, full focus of the mind upon Krishna. It's so hard in Kali Yuga. It's prayena payusa kala kalavasmin yuge jana manda samanda mateo manda abhagya upadrutaha. One of the main symptoms of Kali Yuga is that the mind is always, always disturbed, jumping here, jumping there, and so difficult to focus it on anything. So gradually, if we can focus somehow or another our mind upon Krishna, the yogi, well, this is following the course of yoga, the yogi gradually develops pure love for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari. In the course of his progress in devotional service, the hairs on his body stand erect through excessive joy, and he is constantly bathed in a stream of tears occasioned by intense love. Gradually, even the mind, which he used as a means to attract the Lord, as one attracts a fish to a hook, withdraws from material activity. So this is the process. The more we love Krishna, the more our mind is focused on Krishna in great love, the less attraction we have for the world of matter. Here's Prabhupada's purport. We'll read from somewhere around the middle. The yoga principle of meditation are required, principles of meditation are required as long as one is not situated in pure devotional service. So all the different stages to bring us up to that point, they are for when one is not yet situated in pure devotional service. The mind is used to purify the senses, but when the senses are purified by meditation, there's no need to sit in a particular place and try to meditate upon the form of the Lord. One becomes so habituated that he automatically engages in the personal service of the Lord. So when one actually comes to the stage of love for Krishna, there is no need to go sit and mechanically control the mind to meditate upon him. Rather, when one loves Krishna, one's mind spontaneously goes to Krishna as one, due to the love one wants to serve. And this is called, after Ruchi, Ashakti, attachment. One's mind spontaneously runs to Krishna. It wanders. When it wanders to Krishna, not away from Krishna. What a wonderful thought. And a little further down in the purport. One should engage in the service of the Lord 24 hours a day, as confirmed in the Brahma Samhita. the stage of Premanjana Charita can be attained. Premanjana Charita means when one's eyes are smeared with love. In other words, one's consciousness is so smeared with love that everywhere one looks, one just thinks of and sees Krishna. The stage of Premanjana Charita can be attained by developing complete love. When one's love for the Supreme Personality of Godhead in devotional service is fully developed, one always sees the Lord, even without artificially meditating upon His form. His vision, such a person's vision, is divine because he has no other engagement. There's nothing else that he does except fix his consciousness on this divine form, which means in love for Krishna. So he's fully divine himself. His consciousness is fully transcendental. At this stage of spiritual realization, it is not necessary to engage the mind artificially, to struggle with the mind. It's not necessary. Since the meditation recommended in the lower stages is a means to come to the platform of devotional service, those already engaged in the transcendental loving service of the Lord are above such meditation. This stage of perfection is called Krishna consciousness. So this is what we are aspiring for, this stage of transcendental meditation, Krishna consciousness. Krishna bhakti rasita bhavato mati kriyatam yadi muti chalabhyate. When one is fully relishing or tasting the sweetness of living in his relationship with Krishna, that's what Krishna consciousness is. When the mind, this is text 35, is thus completely freed from all material contamination. So one's consciousness is so focused on the Lord and detached from material objectives. No longer anything to try to obtain materially, selfishly, to enjoy in this world. So one's mind, so that's the freedom from material contamination. Detached from material objectives, it is just like the flame of a lamp. The flame of a lamp in a windless place that does not even slightly flicker. At that time, the mind is actually dovetailed with that of the Supreme Lord and is experienced as one with Him, because it is freed from the interactive flow of the material qualities. So the mind becomes fully fixed in oneness with Krishna. And as we would imagine, when there's a verse like that, when the Lord is experienced as one, in the purport, Prabhupada's going to speak he doesn't that much, actually, just a little at the end. He explains that the oneness with Krishna attained in this way is not you become Krishna. And this will be explained a little bit later by some of the words. We don't become Krishna, but we become one with Krishna in desire. This is also explained in the Bhagavad Gita. Dva imau purusha loke chara aksharu uchite chara savabhutani. All living entities, those who are fallible, there's a duality between them and Krishna. They see themselves as separate from Krishna. But kutosto chara uchite, those who are perfect, they are one with Krishna. But in what sense are they one with Krishna? They are one with Krishna in desire. This means that their heart, their consciousness, is full of love for Krishna. And therefore, what is their desire? Their desire is not to be the independent enjoyer, competitor of Krishna. Rather, they love Krishna, so their desire is to please Him. This is becoming one with Krishna. This is actually becoming one with Krishna's internal energy. Ladini Sambhishakti, Antaranga Shakti. That one is fully aware of who he is in relationship with Krishna, and because of that, he experiences the great ecstasy, the greatest of ecstasy of service to Krishna by having taken shelter of Krishna's internal energy. This is one. This is how to become one with Krishna. Bhaktimam navijananti yavanyas chasmi tatvata tato mam visate gyadva visate taranantaram. Visate means enters into Krishna. So through bhakti, only through bhakti can one actually understand Krishna. Yavanyas chasmi tatvata, as he is. Otherwise one will think that the Supreme is ultimately effulgence and light, and you should become one with that light and go to that place where you'll never come back. But for a devotee, he doesn't want that at all. There are so many different levels of Brahman realization, actually, and a devotee doesn't want any of them. The Buddhists have a materialistic Brahman realization that they get, where they become one with the material energy, Prakriti, or Pradhan. And the Brahmavadis become one with the effulgence of the Lord. But the devotees don't want that at all. What they want is to serve Krishna because they love Krishna. So visate, so through bhakti, one enters into Krishna, but in the same way that one enters into a city. If you enter into a city, you don't be, when you came from down south to Perth, you didn't become... You entered into Perth, the great... You arrived and you entered in. You didn't become one with Perth. You still retain your individuality. So similarly, we enter into Krishna in the sense that we enter into his service. We enter into his internal lila, his spiritual service with all the residents of the spiritual world. So the mind becomes like a lamp in a windless place, just so fixed in that, does not flicker or waver. Because he has no more material desires, he's that pure, such a yogi, through this process of always remembering Krishna and serving him. Prabhupada's purport. In the material world, the activities of the mind are acceptance and rejection. As long as the mind is in material consciousness, it must be forcibly trained to accept meditation on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Meditation is the medication. That's not in the purport. But when one is actually elevated to loving the Supreme Lord, the mind is automatically absorbed in thought of the Lord. In such a position, a yogi has no other thoughts other than to serve the Lord. This dovetailing of the mind with the desires of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is called nirvana, or making the mind one with the Supreme Lord. The best example of nirvana is cited in Bhagavad Gita. In the beginning, the mind of Arjuna deviated from Krishna's. Krishna wanted him to do something, and Arjuna didn't want to. There were two. There was a duality between he and Krishna. Krishna wanted Arjuna to fight, but Arjuna did not want to, so there was disagreement. But after hearing Bhagavad Gita from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Arjuna dovetailed his mind with Krishna's desire. He also wanted to fight. This is called oneness. This oneness, however, did not cause Arjuna and Krishna to lose their individualities. The Mayavadi philosophers cannot understand this. They think that oneness necessitates loss of individuality. Actually, however, we find in Bhagavad Gita that individuality is not lost. When the mind is completely purified in love of Godhead, the mind becomes the mind of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. An amazing statement. The mind at that time does not act separately, nor does it act without inspiration to fulfill the desire of the Lord. So everything is connected to Krishna's inspiration and to satisfy Krishna. And to satisfy him becomes the mind of such a pure devotee. The individual liberated soul has no other activity. Patti nivritta guna pravaha. That's from the verse. In the conditioned state, the mind is always engaged in activity, impelled, forced, pushed. Baladevana yojita, pushed by the three modes of material nature. Sometimes you find when you're chanting japa in the morning, and sometimes you can't do any, the modes say, sleep, close your eyes now, sleep. Just impelled, and sometimes you stand up, run around, do something. You can't sit down, you stand up, and at least I see this sometimes, you stand up and have to do this and have to do that, and want to start immediately getting busy with something. The mode of passion, the mode of ignorance. This is due to attachments in the material world. And when one's mind is free from all material attachments and one is a pure soul, the impellation, what impels one to activities, is no longer the modes of material nature. But actually there's a description later that we'll read of what it is. I won't mention what it is now. But we're impelled basically by the desire to serve Krishna. In the transcendental stage, the material modes cannot disturb the mind of a devotee. The devotee has no other concern than to satisfy the desires of the Lord, and that can't be imitated. That is the highest stage of perfection, called nirvana or nirvana mukti. At this stage, the mind becomes completely free of material desires. So, the third verse, 36. Thus situated in the highest transcendental stage, the mind ceases from all material reactions and becomes situated in its own glory, transcendental to all material conceptions of happiness and distress. At that time, the yogi realizes the truth of his relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He discovers that pleasure and pain, as well as their interactions, which he attributed to his own self, are actually due to the false ego, which is a product of ignorance. So he actually sees at some point, through his great devotion to Krishna, and he's so detached from the false ego that he sees that which goes on in the material world and that which he was identifying with, the pleasures and the pains he thought were happening to him, actually had nothing to do with him at all. That it was just through the false ego, ignorance. Because we've just heard about how the material world is compiled by the Lord, how it's put together, the different elements. And then Devahuti asks the question, how can the soul become free? So he's explaining how one can become free from the ignorance that pushes one into the material world, that false ego, where we see ourselves as different from Krishna, separate from Krishna. Actually, we are not separate from Krishna. It is impossible for us to be separate from Krishna. We can think we are, and that thinking we are causes us to adopt a different identity, but actually we cannot be separate from Krishna. We are eternally his part and parcel. Prabhupada explains in the purport. Forgetfulness of one's relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead is a product of ignorance, darkness, illusion. By yoga practice, one can eradicate this ignorance of thinking oneself independent of the Supreme Lord. One's actual relationship is eternally that of love. The living entity is meant to render transcendental loving service to the Lord. forgetfulness of that sweet relationship is called ignorance. And in ignorance, one is impelled by the three modes of nature to think himself the enjoyer. When the devotee's mind is purified, he can understand that his mind has to be dovetailed with the desires of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When the devotee's mind is purified and he understands that his mind has to be dovetailed with the desires of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he has attained the perfectional transcendental stage, which is beyond the perception of material distress and happiness. When one is living in that, when one's mind is dovetailed, loves Krishna, as long as one acts on his own account, he is subject to all the material perceptions of so-called happiness and distress. Actually, there is no happiness. Just as there is no happiness in any activities of a madman, so in material activities, the mental concoctions of happiness and distress are false. Actually, everything is distress. When the mind is dovetailed to act according to the desires of the Lord, one has attained the transcendental stage. The desire to lord it over material nature is the cause of ignorance. And when that desire is completely extinguished and the desires are dovetailed with those of the Supreme Lord, one has reached a perfectional stage. Text 37. There is somebody who has no, he's practicing yoga or Krishna consciousness, and there he is, and he's realized his relationship with Krishna. But there, he has no attraction to the body anymore. He wants to just serve Krishna. He realizes that the happinesses and distresses of life are just product of the false ego. But yet he's in a material body. So what happens to that body, that material body, to such an exalted devotee? So next in text 37, Kapila Muni continues. Because he has achieved his real identity, the perfectly realized soul has no conception of how the material body is moving or acting. Just as an intoxicated person cannot understand whether or not he has clothing on his body. The body, text 38, of such a liberated yogi, along with the senses, is taken charge of by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and it functions until its destined activities are finished. The liberated devotee, being awake to his constitutional position and thus situated in samadhi, the highest perfectional stage of yoga, does not accept the byproducts of his material body as his own. Thus he considers his bodily activities to be like the activities of a body in a dream. So in a dream, we're walking around in the dream. But then when we wake up, we understand that there is maybe some connection. But that's not you. That dream body that you had has nothing to do with you. You can forget about it practically. So that's how he views it. We'll read some of Prabhupada's purport, all of Prabhupada's purport in this, where he explains this, how the pure soul views his body in a little more detail. The following question may be posed. As long as the liberated soul is in contact with the body, why don't the bodily activities affect him? Doesn't he actually become contaminated by the actions and reactions of material activities? Because you're doing things. You're eating, you're stepping, you're maybe earning money or whatever. You're doing so many things. Don't you get reactions for that? So in answer to such questions, this verse explains that the material body of a liberated soul is taken charge of by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is not acting due to the living force of the living entity. It is not the soul himself is not making it happen. It is simply acting as a reaction to past activities. So one is experiencing one's karma. This is called parabdha karma, or the karma that we, the particular karma that we are awarded as we come into this material world. Each and every one of us have some. We have aparabdha karma and parabdha karma, bijakuta. These are different stages of our karma. Aparabdha karma is the huge, huge mountain that we carry around with us, like a huge bag that the size of a mountain. We heard yesterday the sinful activities compared to a mountain. So it is, we're carrying that around, and it is a great weight. But we don't get it all in this life. But we have a certain allotment, some rocks or something, that we are due to experience in this life. And based on the particular karma that we're due to experience in this life, we get a body, a specific body. And if we look around the room, we'll see that each and every one of us have different bodies, different shapes, different hair, different noses, different this, different that, different types of intelligence, different ways of viewing the world, different shoe sizes, nose sizes, eye colors, likes, dislikes, everything. It's different because we have our individual karma. So the amount that we are allotted in this life is called parabdha karma, or sometimes it's like the material body. So if we didn't have any parabdha karma, our body would fall down. So a devotee or this type of a yogi, he's completely detached from his body, but yet the body is going on by the power of the karma until the parabdha karma is finished. That's allotted for this life. It basically just goes on under Krishna's supervision. So this is also explained in a similar way in the fifth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. That movement, so here's an example to make it clearer. Even after being switched off, an electric fan moves for some time. Now we will have the visuals of this. Could someone just flick the fan on and then turn it off? And you can have a look. And we will see the philosophy being demonstrated before our very eyes. Okay, let it go, and now turn it off. Okay, so the electricity is no longer powering it, but yet it's still moving. It's working by the momentum. You can stop looking at the fan. Unless you're real fans. It's hard to stop looking at it once you're looking at it. When is the exact moment it stops? So when the exact moment that we finish our karma, the parabdha karma, the body dies. So no connection. So the movement is not due to the electric current, but is a continuation of the last movement. Similarly, although a liberated soul appears to be acting like an ordinary man, his actions are to be accepted as the continuation of past activities. In a dream, one may see himself expanded through so many bodies, through many bodies. But when awake, he can understand that those bodies were all false. Similarly, although a liberated soul has the byproducts of the body, children, wife, house, etc., he does not identify himself with those bodily expansions. He knows that they are all products of the material dream. The gross body is made of the gross elements of matter, and the subtle body is made of mind, intelligence, and ego, and contaminated consciousness. If one can accept the subtle body of a dream as false and not identify oneself with that body, because when we dream, it's a body created by the subtle body, so we accept that as false, then certainly an awake person need not identify with the gross body. As one who is awake has no connection with the activities of the body in a dream, an awakened, liberated soul has no connection with the activities of the present body. In other words, because he is acquainted with his constitutional position, he never accepts the bodily concept of life. Because of great affection, text 39, for family and wealth, one accepts a son and some money as his own. And due to affection for the material body, one thinks, that it is his. But actually, as one can understand that his family and wealth are different from him, the liberated soul can understand that he and his body are not the same, because his affection isn't for his body, it's for Krishna. Now, so that's how the liberated soul sees his body. Now, how does he see himself? And how does he see the Lord? We read text 40 and 41. These verses explain Achintya Veda Veda Tattva, the philosophy of the relationship between everything and the Lord, and the Lord and everything. The blazing fire. So in text 40, there is an example of what's going to be explained in text 41. So listen carefully. The blazing fire is different from the flames. What is the blazing fire different from? The flames. Is that true? Is the fire different from the flames? The blazing fire is different from the flames, from the sparks, and from the smoke. Although all are intimately connected because they are born from the same blazing wood. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is known as Param Brahma, is the seer. He is different from the jiva souls, or the individual living entities. The individual living entity who is combined with the senses, the five elements, and consciousness. So, the Lord, as the fire itself, is different. In one sense, it's different from, you can't, because you can say, oh look, there's fire, there is sparks, there's flames, there's sparks, there is smoke. So in one sense, if the smoke is in the room, do we say the fire is in the room? No. If there's smoke, we it's not fire. And if there's sparks, are the sparks the fire? No. And the flames, it's composed of the whole thing. So the parts are not the whole, but the whole is not different from the parts either. So similarly, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the Parabrahma, or the Supreme Greatest, the greatest person, he is the seer. He is aware of everything. He is different from the jiva souls. So the jiva soul, the individual souls, are not the supreme any more than the sparks of the fire. But not yet, not different from them, but not, they are not them. This is Achintya Veda Veda. Because and the jiva, what, he is combined with the senses, the five elements, and consciousness. Jiva means the conditioned soul. Prabhupada's purport. A clear conception of the complete whole is given herewith. The living entity is different from the material elements, and the supreme living entity, this personality of Godhead, who is the creator of the material elements, is also different from the individual living entities. So we are not the same as God. We are not God. But yet, although we are the same, although we are different, we are yet not different. So simultaneously, bade abade, different and non-different, at the same time, achintya. Inconceivably, we are. You say one thing, yes, we are different from God. But it is not exactly true. And we say, yes, we are one with God. Yes, it's true, but it's not exactly true. So at the same time we are one with God, we are different from Him. We have individuality, so we are different. But yet we cannot be separated from Him. Nothing can be separated from Him. Absolute truth means there is nothing that is independent of Him and doesn't rest upon Him. But yet we are different from Him. Because we are individual souls with our individual free will. We are persons. And we don't have the same consciousness that he has. He is aware of everything. His consciousness is spread everywhere. Our consciousness is limited to our bodies when we're awake. So this philosophy, as propounded by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, is a chintya beta beta tattva. Everything is simultaneously one with and different from everything else. So we are one with Krishna but different from Krishna, because we have the material energy is there. We are one with it in one sense because it's all connected to Krishna, and yet we are different. We are conscious. The cosmic manifestation created by the Supreme Lord by His material energy is also simultaneously different and non-different from Him. The material energy is non-different from the Supreme Lord, but at the same time, because that energy is acting in a different way, it is different from Him. Similarly, the individual living entity is one with and different from the Supreme Lord. This simultaneously one and different philosophy is the perfect conclusion of the Bhagavata school, as confirmed here by Kapila Dev. Living entities are compared to the sparks of a fire. As stated in the previous verse, fire, flame, smoke, and firewood are combined together. Here, the living entities, the material elements, and the Supreme Personality of Godhead are combined together. The exact position of the living entity is just like the sparks of a fire. They are part and parcel. The material energy is compared to the smoke. The fire is also part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. In the Vishnu Purana, it is said that whatever we can see or experience, either in the material or spiritual world, is an expansion of the different energies of the Supreme Lord. As fire distributes its light and heat from one place, the Supreme Personality of Godhead distributes His different energies all over the creation. 42. This is the yogi's view of the entire manifestation. So this is fixed stuff. This is very all philosophical conclusions that the yogi is experiencing and living in. He's not seeing the world as we see the world, as conditioned souls. Atteva maya tari ishtadeva sputti. He sees everything as a manifestation of his ishtadeva, his worshipful Lord Krishna. So therefore, wherever he looks, he sees Krishna. Wherever he looks, just imagine how wonderful love of Krishna is. Everywhere one would look, one would see, whatever he sees is a manifestation of that beloved, that all-attractive, most beautiful Supreme Person. Seeing nothing as independent from him. Seeing nothing as meant for me, 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 me. Everything is a manifestation of Krishna, and everything is Krishna's and meant for Krishna. That love is required to be on that platform. So, something on the oneness, because there was the difference, the oneness. A yogi should see the same soul in all manifestations, for all that exists is a manifestation of the different energies of the Supreme. That's text 42. In this way, the devotee should see all living entities without distinction. That is realization of the Supreme Soul. That will be explained further in the next chapter. To make a distinction between oneself and others is caused by Maya. So that would be, we'll talk about that, a very interesting concept. Prabhupada, we'll read just a short paragraph of Prabhupada's purport to this. As stated in the Brahma Samhita, not only, so this is describing the oneness, and the previous verse described more the difference. Previous verses. He is different from the Lord is different. Here is oneness, because everything is related to Krishna, comes from him, is his energy. As stated in the Brahma Samhita, not only does the Supreme Soul enter each and every universe, but he enters even the atoms. The Supreme Soul is present everywhere in the dormant stage. And when one can see the presence of the Supreme Soul everywhere, one is liberated from material designation. As fire is exhibited in different forms of wood, so under different conditions of the modes of material nature, the pure spirit soul manifests itself in different bodies. So the example is that everything is, after explaining the difference, here explaining the commonality, the similarity of everything. Just as fire, there's different kinds of wood. But within each kind of wood, even though there's big pieces of wood and little pieces of wood and birch wood and this wood and jara wood and this wood and that wood, but still within each of them there's one kind of fire. So similarly, within each thing that exists is one Supreme Lord. So that is the oneness of everything. That there's nothing at all in existence that is independent of Krishna. Prabhupada's, we'll read the second paragraph of Prabhupada's purport, or some of it. The small particles of soul are just like sparks of the largest soul. The greatest soul is the super soul. But the super soul is quantitatively different from the small soul. The super soul is described in the Vedic literature as the supplier of all necessities of the smaller soul, nityo nityanam, chaitanas chaitanananam. One who understands this distinction between the super soul and the individual soul is above lamentation and is in a peaceful position. When the smaller soul thinks himself qualitatively as big as the larger soul, he is under the spell of Maya. For that is not his constitutional position. No one can become the greater soul simply by mental speculation. So Prabhupada is criticizing the impersonalists who think by the power of their mind, by manipulation of their mind, they'll become God or one with God. So that's absurd. Because what causes our anxiety? We're trying to do something, accomplish something for our own benefit. So based on this selfishness, we are doing, we are working, we are, you can do it, can do. And we're combating, we're fighting the material energy, and it's a losing fight. So therefore, there's always so much to lament about, so much anxiety. But when we accept that we are Krishna's servant, we are tiny, we are insignificant, we are dependent upon Him, and we want fully, with our full heart, to serve Him because He is so wonderful, He is all attractive, then actually whatever happens is seen as His mercy, and there is no lamentation. And in that way one actually can become peaceful. A devotee actually lives in the mercy of Krishna. And therefore he's not in the material world when he's seemingly in the material world. His body is moving in the material world according to his service and his karma. But he himself, his consciousness is in Krishna always. It's like a lamp in a windless place. It's steady and fixed upon Krishna. When we become like that, and that type of thinking of Krishna due to love, then we will have our desire. That is the soul's desire. So therefore we should hear about Krishna and chant with great affection. Anande Bolo Hari Vajra Vrindavan Sri Guru Vaishnava Pade Majayama. It is the quality of the feeling of the chanting. And also we heard, there was that interesting phrase, I didn't speak about it, that the mind of a person who is meditating on Krishna becomes like a hook. What did that mean? It becomes a hook to attract the Supreme Lord. When one's mind is full of love for Krishna, it attracts Krishna to come, practically to descend into the mind, into the chitta, into the consciousness. When the consciousness is pure, sandini shakti, when it is pure, like a dham, like a holy place, well, and then one desires Krishna, without being able to live a moment without Krishna, when that kind of desire is in the consciousness, a shakti, then Krishna will descend into the consciousness by His mercy and by the mercy of the devotees. But if our consciousness isn't pure, or even if it is pure, but we don't have the desire, if it is free from impurities, but we don't desire Krishna to come, then he won't come. Or if it is impure, he won't come. So the final verse in this chapter, and the final verse we'll read today. Thus the yogi can be in the self-realized position after conquering the insurmountable spell of Maya, who presents herself as both the cause and effect of this material manifestation, and is therefore very difficult to understand. What did that verse say? I'll read it one more time. Listen to this. It's not an easy verse. Thus the yogi can be in the self-realized position after conquering the insurmountable spell of Maya. Just conquering something that's insurmountable. Conquering something that's unconquerable. It's done by grace, by our power. It is insurmountable, unconquerable. Daivyesha guna mayi mama maya devatiya. Mamevate prapadyante, by surrender to Krishna, by giving the heart to Krishna, by accepting that we are tiny and we're fully dependent on Krishna and that we want to serve and love him. Then Krishna does the conquering. So the yogi can be in the self-realized position after conquering the insurmountable spell of Maya. So Devahuti had asked, how can you separate this the living entity from this matter? So this is explained how, and it can be done. He can be in the self-realized position, but he has to conquer Maya. And here's this description of Maya, who presents herself as both the cause and the effect of this material manifestation. So that means the cause is, this is Sadatmikam Sadasat. So she's making it happen, and she's what happens. And she's therefore very difficult to understand. Here's Prabhupada's purport. It is stated in the Bhagavad Gita that the spell of Maya, what a term, the spell of Maya. How would you like to be under the spell of anything? Is that dangerous to be under a spell? It would seem, right? Yes? If you're under someone's spell. It's very dangerous. Why? Yeah. And who's... Huh? You're not in control, and then that person who's got you under their spell can do anything they want with you. And Maya, to be under the spell of Maya, what does she do with us? She kills us and makes fools out of us and makes us see everything upside down. It is stated in the Bhagavad Gita that the spell of Maya, which covers the knowledge of the living entity, is insurmountable. That's that verse, Daivyesha guna mayi mama maya devatiya. However, one who surrenders unto Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, can conquer this seemingly insurmountable spell of Maya. Here also it is stated that the Devi Prakriti, or the external energy of the Supreme Lord, is durvibhavya, or very difficult to understand and very difficult to conquer. One must, however, conquer this insurmountable spell of Maya. And this is possible by the grace of the Lord when God reveals himself to the surrendered soul. We are dependent on his mercy, grace. It is also stated here, Sarupena avitishtate. Sarupa means that one has to know that he is not the Supreme Soul. Swarupam. Swa means our own, and rupa means form. What is our own form, our own identity? We are not the Supreme. We should know that very clearly. But rather than being the Supreme, we are part and parcel of the Supreme Soul. That is self-realization. To think falsely that one is the Supreme Soul and that one is all-pervading is not Swarup. This is not realization of his actual position. The real position is that one is part and parcel. It is recommended here that one remain in that position that one remains in that position of actual self-realization. In the Bhagavad Gita, this understanding is defined as Brahman realization. After Brahman realization, when we understand we are Krishna's part and parcel, one can engage in the activities of Brahman. As long as one is not self-realized, he engages in activities based on false identification with the body. When one is situated in his real self, then the activities of Brahman realizations begin. This is Brahma Bhuta Prasanakmana Sochati Nakasi Sameshu Bhuteshu Madbhaktim Labhate Param. Then we begin bhakti, actually, when we can serve Krishna with great love on this very elevated position on the Brahman platform. Okay. For those who engage in devotional service, there is no spell of Maya, and their situation is all perfect. The duty of the living entity as part and parcel of the whole is to render devotional service to the whole. That is the ultimate perfection of life. So that ends chapter 28. Now in 29, Kapila Muni, this is the last chapter where he's going to describe the Sankhya Yoga. The last elements of Sankhya Yoga, which is quite interesting. He describes the different types of devotional service, which is basically what he's been describing, but through the process of yoga. So this will be the last chapter when he describes that, and then the chapters after that, that will be chapter 29, and hopefully the plan is to cover that chapter next week. Then there's 30, 31, and 32. And those chapters are very heavy chapters. Those are chapters that evoke renunciation in the heart. Because it gives us I don't want to spoil the fun of it all, but it gives us a quick overview of what material life is like. And it's very heavy. And when you go through it fast, when you see it in a moment, you know, in 1 minute, when you realize what life is, then it makes you not want to take part in material life, because the ending is horrible, only to begin again and go through the same cycle again. So much suffering. So we'll hear that not next week. We'll begin that one the week after. Okay, any questions or comments? Yeah.
I have a question about this that states it.
What number?
38.
Yeah.
This body takes charge.
Yeah.
It's the body of the liberated soul.
Yes.
The question was, in the Purple Prabhupada is also referring to
karma.
Karma, continuation of the last prabhupada karma. What's the interrelationship between the two points?
He knows he doesn't have anything to do with it. That's the first point. And he has his karma, and the body is working under the karma. And the karma is working under, ultimately, under Prakriti Kriyamanani Gunai Kamani Sarvasha. So it's ultimately working under Krishna. So when you look at it from one point of view, it's working under his karma. But there's a difference between working under the karma and working under the karma when Krishna is the controller of the karma. So for a devotee, the karma isn't the final judge as what's going to happen to the person. For a non-devotee, the karma is the final judge. Basically, Krishna just sanctions. But Krishna, for a devotee, he deals with his devotee as he likes. Generally, he will use the karma, but he also adjusts it, especially for preachers. So therefore, tateyana kampam susamikshamano. A devotee sees that Krishna has minimized what I deserve, my karma. And he's given me more than I deserve, better than I deserve too. But yet there's definitely some relationship to our, not to our, even in our stage, but even to an exalted devotee, there's some, he's wearing the same material body, things like that. That's my understanding. What an astute question. Any other questions, comments? Tomorrow we shall go to Panihati. You have been to Panihati? Who's cooking tomorrow? Who will cook the feast? You have been to the Panihati festival?
5 times.
5 times? Tomorrow is 6th time? Well, you won't count this one. There's also a Panihati festival, but different. You have been? How many times? More than 5. How many more? 100, 200? Only in this life. You're not allowed to count previous lives. Huh?
Maybe 7 or 8 times.
7 or 8 times. Did you serve or did you take only?
So we did kirtan and the guru program.
Yeah. Did you cook for that festival?
Yes, Rasa? Potol sadis.
Potol?
Guru pants, potol sadis.
Yeah. Is it blissful festival?
Yeah.
So nice.
All day, I know that.
And how many people came?
Thousands.
Yeah? I had one question about Panihati festival. It describes in Chaitanya Charitamrita it was so crowded that people were in the water eating. You have seen the devotees go in the water and eat?
Yes.
Yeah?
I've seen.
Yeah?
So many people.
In the water and eating.
But sometimes every Panihati you shop, big rain comes.
Ah.
Big rain, every day.
So whether you want to be in the water or not, you're wet. You, when we have the class tomorrow, you come and you can say, you can tell us, and you too, okay? You can say something, sing something. Please, we'll be inside. As you like, if you want to, if you want to really get into the spirit of things, or if you want, you can go to the Swan River and get in and eat your rice, dipped rice. You can do that also. I'll be here though, in front of the heater. After all, it's the Swan River. You'll be the only one. The only swan eating his chipped rice. And that, at that time, Nityananda Prabhu puts his head on Raghunath Das's head 2 times. He puts his feet on his head 2 times and blesses him.
To forfeit.
Huh? No. Not even 1 time. Yeah, you'll take me? Please? You take me. How far is it from Calcutta?
Calcutta, Panihati,
16
kilometers.
No. 16? 30. I've been to Calcutta, but not to Panihati. Okay, Hare Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.